Welcome back to Series Regular, the Hollywood Reporter's all-in podcast on genre television. I'm your host, Josh Wigler, and for the next several weeks, we are all in on one show and one show only, HBO's Westworld. This week, we are talking about episode 3 of season 3, The Absence of Field. It centers largely on Tessa Thompson's character, and I'm tempted to say Charlotte Hale. I will probably say Charlotte Hale for the rest of the podcast, but obviously the truth is a lot more complicated than that.
Bring yourself back online. Recording timestamp. This is Charlotte Elizabeth Hale. This is a message for Nathan.
Charlotte Hale, the Delos board director who stalked seasons 1 and 2 of Westworld, is dead. Killed at the hands of Dolores at the end of season 2.
You wanted to live forever. Be careful what you wish for.
But there is still room for Tessa Thompson on the show, as the season 2 finale illustrated. Dolores escaped the park by wearing a body designed by Bernard that looks exactly like Charlotte Hale. Here in the present timeline of season 3, someone is still kicking around in that Charlotte Hale suit, running Delos for Dolores' needs. Who is it? Episode 3 didn't tell us. We still don't know, but we got a much closer look at the psyche of this character. Whoever it is that's lurking inside of Charlotte Hale is having a really difficult time pretending to be this person. Maybe one of the most miraculous magic tricks Westworld has ever pulled off is making you kind of feel bad for Charlotte Hale. This episode, The Absence of Field, invites you into her life a little bit, shows you that Charlotte was a mother, not just a greedy Delos board member who hated robots. She loved her son Nathan deeply. Her son Nathan is a very sweet child who very clearly knows that the woman parading around as Charlotte Hale is not his mom, at least not exactly. We also find out that Charlotte Hale wasn't even necessarily super loyal to Delos. There's a mole problem here in Delos, as we find out in Westworld Season 3, Episode 3. And Charlotte, this new Charlotte, is trying to figure out who on the board is working against Delos' interests. Turns out, it was Charlotte herself.
You work for him?
As do you, Charlotte.
Rock.
Have you forgotten our arrangement? Seems like you've been playing your role maybe a little too well.
The situation has been challenging.
She finds this out in a very intense meeting with Serac, the character played by Vincent Cassell, introduced at the end of episode 2, The Winter Line. What does he want with Delos' controlling interests? We're going to talk about that a little bit more today in the podcast with myself and THR senior producer Mariah Gullo. On top of that, we'll also talk about everything going on with the Aaron Paul character, Caleb Nichols, who collides with Dolores this week in a much bigger way than even the season premiere. Caleb and Dolores' paths are now very much linked, and we are very much interested in a certain breakfast order that is placed on Caleb's behalf. To unpack that a little bit more, let's bring in Mariah Gullo. All right, Mariah, bring yourself back online for a cheeseburger and strawberry shake. Look what I got for you.
I remember what it's like to be me, Josh.
Oh, my God. What a neat trick. I knew your order. What would be your standard diner order? Are you and Aaron Paul eating the same thing for breakfast, or are you going a different way?
You know, I think Aaron Paul might have ruined strawberry milkshakes for me for a while.
Yeah, me too. Which is the problem, Mariah, because in our current situation, like I'm relying very much on the same breakfast every morning. I've been making like a berry smoothie every morning.
Oh, that's good. That's really healthy. Antioxidants.
It is. It is. And I've got like the acai in there, and it's just got a lot of great stuff in it. But I'm going to have a hard time blending it together without thinking about Aaron Paul. I think I'm just going to try and focus on the good stuff with Aaron Paul and not so much on the poor, scared little Caleb version that we got in this episode.
That was very painful to watch. I am one of those people who gets uncomfortable with any situations where somebody is you know, feeling shame or fear or humiliated. It doesn't matter if it's a bad guy or a good guy. That situation,
their anxiety translates to you. You feel anxious for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we are simpatico, my friend. There was a lot of that this week.
Yeah.
This was a very anxious episode of Westworld. It was very stressful. You know, it's Aaron Paul's character coming to grips with so much of what his reality is really all about and finding out about how much control the powers that be have had over his existence. And I think we could talk about some of the details from that. I think there's a lot of sad information that we get there. But even like everything that's going on with Charlotte, like Charlotte herself is obviously very stressed out. But we as the viewer, we're very stressed out as well, because we get a real great Tessa Thompson showcase this week, but we walk away from the week still without, you know, concrete information about who she is
who
now.
Are you, Charlotte?
Who are
Hale?
You, lady?
Who are you?
What was your overall reaction to hour three here of season three?
Oh, I loved it. I love seeing Tessa Thompson have to go through so many different character changes. In one episode, she goes from a mole, she's an AI, a host hiding inside of a human. She's a human hiding from other. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it, but she has to be at least five different personalities in one episode. And I loved it. It was delicious. It was delicious acting, in my opinion.
Yeah. Better than a strawberry shake. I don't know. I don't want to evoke the strawberry shake too much, but I'm sure this is not the last time I'll bring up the strawberry shake. No, Tessa was amazing in this episode. She was really great. This was probably, I think this is definitely the best showcase of Tessa Thompson of the whole series. She's a character that really activates towards the end of season one and is a huge force of antagonism from that point forward through the season two finale. And then she gets killed and there's like this really amazing twist of, oh my God, Dolores was in Charlotte's brain and she was able to escape the park that way. But then we got to the end of season two and Dolores is out in the world and she's bringing Bernard back online. And there's Tessa Thompson, just like the lackey, right? Like the bodyguard lurking in the background. Like, who are you? Who is that now? And we don't have clarity on the answer yet as of this episode. But what we do get is, I think, a real vivid identity crisis in like massively cool science fiction form.
Yeah.
Where, like you say, it's just like it's the robot who clearly is struggling with who she is now. No matter who it is that's in there, this is somebody who is struggling deeply with being Charlotte Hale. And the show is like trying to make us feel bad for Charlotte Hale, who was so terrible to so many people in the first two seasons. And like, that's a bit of a magic trick, Mariah, that they were able to kind of pull that off with everything connecting her to her child. I suddenly found myself with tons of empathy for this character who's no longer with us.
Yeah, absolutely. There was nothing creepier than seeing host Charlotte Hale try to connect with her child.
With Nathan,
And Nathan is very suspicious. But you do feel for the host. I have the question of, when the host is saying, it's like she's trying to take back control, it makes me wonder, is this a possibility? Is it a possibility for the person that they're impersonating to be able to take control back?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing too, of like, is it metaphorical or is it literal when she says it feels like she's trying to rip me out of her skin? Is it a commentary on the further evolution of the hosts that they are able to feel, now that they're conscious, now that many of them are conscious, that they can feel a certain level of like guilt and shame? Is whoever is running around as Charlotte now not feeling so great about this mission that Dolores has set her on? And is she starting to feel her own sense of empathy for the woman who is deceased, the woman she's parading around as Charlotte Hale, now that she knows about her ex-husband or whoever the Michael Ealy character is, now that she's, you know, connecting with her son, with Charlotte's son, and Charlotte's son being like, you're not my mom, I miss my old mommy, is so brutal. And if this is a host who is learning like what it's like to wake up and be real and have your own emotions and everything, this is a very painful way of entering the world, having to wear not just somebody else's face, but the face of somebody very prominent who you just kind of thought of as a monster and is now being revealed to be if not more than a monster, then at least the monster has a different side of her. There's, you know, there's something about her that is redeemable, that she seemed to be a really good, loving mom. So that piece of it is it just a host who's starting to empathize? Or is it, like you are saying, like you're suggesting, is it possible that Charlotte is somehow still kicking around in there? Like, mm-hmm. we don't know the extent of, you know, so Bernard brought Charlotte back, right? Mm-hmm. Bernard in season two brings the Charlotte host body online, puts Dolores in the Charlotte host body. Dolores via Charlotte, who Evan Rachel Wood and Tessa Thompson at the time referred to as Holoris. Holoris kills OG Charlotte Hale and then is able to leave as her. But it's only possible because Bernard puts this plan into place. Is it possible that Bernard has a level of foresight that we have not yet seen, that he like built some sort of Charlotte Hale backdoor failsafe into the Charlotte body? Like, could he have, like, because Dayla's had this possibility of, like, they had everybody's psyches mapped, right?
That's right.
So does she still exist? Is she still in there? Is she literally fighting for survival? Could be something that we could see, which would be
right. There was
pretty wild.
Ford saying that the dead could be resurrected somehow, you know? So we're always waiting to see if the show is going to pull that trigger.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's really interesting. And I think, you know, I wonder what the line is going to be from the audience of, how frustrated are we that we still don't know who Charlotte is versus how compelled are we with whoever's journey this is, that this seems to be a difficult ride? And like, who does that narrow it down to? I think like a lot of like the popular suspects coming into the season would probably fit the bill. Like, is this somehow Teddy? Like, there is a closeness.
Is it Clementine? Is it?
You know, exactly. Clementine is on my mind watching this episode. Like, there's the way that Charlotte gestures at her own face when she's looking in the mirror. That feels very much like the reveries of Clementine. She has a fairly big reaction when she hears that Maeve's control unit is no longer at Westworld when the guys come and tell her that we're doing inventory right now. And mostly, like, side characters are missing, but this one is also missing, and it's Maeve. If that's Clementine, you would understand why she would have a big reaction. If it's Teddy, you would understand why he would have a big reaction. And both of those are people that I think in the past have shown a level of empathy towards humans and everything like that, but also certainly with Teddy, a closeness towards Dolores. So I think that those are still solid bets if those are your bets coming into it. The one thing I would say is very clearly the show is deeply interested in the who is this person question. Like, I thought it could be possible that like it wasn't really going to matter and it's just a new character. But the question of like, who am I? Yeah. Who am I really? Is so on the forefront of the show's mind that it's going to have a very specific answer. And I'm sure whoever Charlotte is somebody that we know.
And it's interesting to see this host so vulnerable, so exposed compared to Dolores, who is basically murdering people in a little black dress and dragging bodies around like they're a beanbag. It's really fun to see how powerful Dolores has become.
Yeah, and I think like the contrast this week between Dolores and Charlotte was especially stark and really helpful, because I think like to have somebody who's obviously in cahoots with Dolores but is maybe feeling a little like sketch about it. It's like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know that I feel great about what's going on here. I think it's a good counterpoint to have in the, you know, in the family, as it were, for Dolores. Like, even when she does link up with Charlotte and she and Charlotte go up to the hotel room, and Dolores is doing that really sweet thing she does where she's talking to somebody in her ear and she's able to just like book rooms on the fly, which, man, when this is all done, Mariah, that'd be a really cool feature to incorporate for future travel purposes.
Absolutely.
Should we be so lucky?
Alexa, get me a hotel room.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be really great. And even then, like, Charlotte's like, are you booking these rooms on either side because you're going to kill me? And Dolores is like, it's not going to come to that. The fact that she says it's not going to come to that is like she's leaving open, like, if someday it does come to that, I'm willing to take that measure. So I think that speaks pretty intriguingly to the dynamic between these two characters. And I think you're absolutely right that like watching Dolores in the black dress just dragging people around, like they're, you know, like you're a kid with a blanket and you're looking for your mom. Like it's that, like the physical ease with which she is dragging people all over the place.
That is not easy. I remember seeing Mr. and Mrs. Smith and seeing Angelina Jolie with two Desert Eagle guns in her hands shooting and thinking, well, that doesn't look realistic at all. But the way that Evan uses a gun, the way that she drags herself around, it really feels like there's weight to everything she's doing. So I believe that she is a robot and not
totally
a human being with average human being strength.
Right. Let's talk about Dolores, because this is a big Dolores episode. We took a week off from Evan Rachel Wood last week. We took a week off from Aaron Paul. And Mariah, you didn't get to talk about the premiere with me. So we talked about it a little bit, just like sort of broad strokes of what you're enjoying about the season three reboot. But now we're going to get a chance here to talk in really great detail about what's going on with Dolores and what's going on with Caleb, the Aaron Paul character. And the meet cute is over, right? Like that has happened now. It was almost like a M-E-A-T cute because there was lots of dead bodies involved. it was very, very violent. But they are now connected, and it seems like Dolores has recruited Caleb to her cause. Like she goes through this really grand gesture of inviting him into her circle. What did you make of everything that was going on with Dolores and Caleb this week?
Well, I really enjoyed this line. What are you going to do? Start a revolution?
No offense, but what the fuck does that mean?
Caleb is all of us. Caleb is all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think very intentionally, Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy create the Caleb character as one of the first relatable human characters on Westworld. Yes. And I think you're exactly right. Like that line is like, thank you from your lips to God's ears. That is exactly the question that is on my mind. WTF is the question.
They have a wonderful chemistry. It's really fun when they're together, when they're talking. You not only do you get great information because Dolores is explaining to Caleb how things are working in this world, but you also get this great chemistry between the two of them. And you know that this is going somewhere, you know, and it's very exciting to watch. And I think that Dolores has made a good case that Caleb should jump on board with her. But he's always going to be questioning her, which is fantastic, because then we get information.
Yes. Yeah. As long as someone's in the room asking questions, I think that's going to benefit us greatly. And if they're doing it, and if the avatar for that is Aaron Paul, that's a pretty top notch ambassador for the line of inquiry, I think. Through the conversations between Dolores and Caleb, we come to find out a little bit about Caleb's past. You know, his mother, who he's been checking in on, that we've seen throughout the premiere and now a little bit here in episode three again, that she abandoned him when he was young. She had a schizophrenia diagnosis. This was all very traumatic. It was the worst day of his life. He got a free strawberry shake, but he threw it up and ruined strawberry shakes for everybody forever. I'm doing my part to further that narrative, I suppose. And Dolores knows everything about it, right? Like she knows that story inside and out. And that really sketches Caleb out. It doesn't make him angry, Mariah. It makes him enraged, is the word that he uses. And then he comes to find out that this is all because of like the predictive algorithms of Insight and the Rehoboam computer, and the fact that it's really it makes assessments of people because it has all of this raw data that's been inputted into it, that it makes assessments of like basically like risk value judgments, right? Of like, this is what this person is likely going to be worth, so let's just, you know, curtail their existence in this direction to work within that. And by extension, like you're making this thing that you're predicting possible because you're ruining their shot at being anything different, by being anything other than what you're just predicting them to be. And Caleb is really furious about this. And this is a very scary concept for all of us we've been living in the age of social media. And if we were extremely online before, Mariah, I don't know what we want to classify the current era of being online as.
Right.
We are astonishingly online today. And I think that this is a pretty scary indictment of the future through the lens of Westworld.
Yes, it feels a lot like the net neutrality controversy, because basically the Insight computer, Rehoboam, is able to slow down your internet or, you know, like basically put a put a boot on your neck.
Right.
So that you fail. So yeah, I feel like this is, it's interesting because my boyfriend and I have arguments all the time about this idea of if you could have a computer, it's weird that we have this conversation, but if you could have a computer that could tell you all of the right moves, that you could make the good moves, this is the healthy choice, this is the choice that'll save you money, would you give up your free will for it? And here we are.
Yeah, and we're asking that question on the show, and Caleb is certainly asking that question as well. And the answer he seems to arrive at the end is like, revolution sounds good. Because, you know, what he's getting from Insight and what he's gathering from Dolores, who's, you know, shown him this magic trick, you know, I think he doesn't need much more to be convinced other than going to the diner, like getting the exact order, getting all the details of that story, you know, parroted back to him, and then being told this predictive algorithm suggests in 10 to 12 years, you're going to take your own life here at the Santa Monica Pier. And that is like very scary to him. He's like, come on, that's not going to happen. And she's like, have you never come out here and considered it? And we see like flashes of times when he was there at night and he's looking out there. And like he knows within himself that like, okay, I guess I've considered it. I guess they think that this is the likely thing to do. And so he's going to rebel against the machine.
He's Neo from the Matrix.
He is. Yeah, he's taken. Was it, did you take the blue pill or the red pill is the one that wakes you up? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Taking the wake me up pill. Yeah.
That's right.
Someone can let us know the color. but she says that she's going to cut the cord to the system and show the world for what it really is. My question for you, Mariah, is we've known for a long time that Dolores has had it out for humanity. We watched her in season two. She really was going up against human beings with real ruthlessness, not a lot of reserve, not a lot of love for anybody. And here she's meeting Caleb, and it seems like they have a connection. It seems like she sees a lot of potential in him. It seems like she's talking about the revolution in terms where she's not clearly articulating what it is that she is to Caleb, mm-hmm. right? If her plans involve destroying humanity, she's not really letting him know about that piece of it.
Yeah.
Do you think that her plan does involve destroying humanity, or is Caleb opening her eyes to the possibility that host kind and humankind can live side by side?
Yeah, that's interesting because obviously her meeting Caleb is going to change the path of her direction, but it just keeps reminding me, why did she create Bernard? If she is so hell-bent on destroying humanity, did she recreate Bernard and send him out into the world so that he could be a check on her? Or that
right.
somehow he was going to be useful to her in the future. Why is she going to Caleb, somebody who is a human, who is basically, she sees potential in? Is that going to be a problem for her? Or is that somehow going to advance whatever the ultimate plan is?
Right. We don't know yet, but it's great to have these characters linked up this early on in the season. We still have 5 episodes left. So for Dolores and Caleb to be working in tandem with each other at this point, I'm pretty happy about that. You know, I'm unhappy about, and I think we have to pour out a strawberry shake for your friend and mine, George the Robot. R.I.P. George. It's the end of the line for poor George.
I really wonder, I mean, that, first of all, what I wrote in my notes was robot super fake out.
yeah.
That was amazing. I love these robots. I stan the robots.
Yeah, me too.
All of the robots have been amazing so far. I love their death scenes.
It's a pro-robot podcast. Probots.
Yeah. I mean, we're out of Westworld, but we still have railing kills. You know, like the guy, the Western guy falling off the balcony. Like, we still have that, but in the form of a robot.
Right. It's sad, though. I don't know that they're going to be able to. He seemed pretty smashed to smithereens, but it was very touching that, like, George gets like the call, right? Like, he knows his partner's in pain. He's like, oh, Caleb's here. It sounds like he's in distress. I gotta go help Caleb. And poor George walks all the way up there and they just like sidestep and push him over. He doesn't even get to put up a fight.
I know.
I hated it.
You know, he did the right thing. He distracted them for a moment. That's all he needed.
He bought Caleb a little bit of time. His death was not in vain.
He was falling, and he went, I regret nothing.
I think George is the early MVP of season 3.
Maybe MVP George will be back.
Yeah, it's possible. I suppose it's possible. We get in this episode a little bit more about Serac, about the Vincent Cassell character, and that there's been this like long drawn out micro takeover of Delos over the last several years, that like 38% of the company has been bought out. It's enough to make it impossible for Delos to go private. And this all gets sourced back to Serac, who is like the Invisible Man, not like the Universal horror movie villain, but is like the wealthiest person ever, is a trillionaire. There's like $1 trillion of the economy that's just unaccounted for. And so they suspect that it all belongs to Serac, which is terrifying and makes sense if he is like the co-creator of Rehoboam and Insight and everything, that he would be that powerful. We simultaneously find out that there is a mole at Delos, that somebody inside of Delos has been feeding Serac information. And by the end of the episode, to me, it's pretty clear, wondering your take on this, that turns out that Charlotte Hale was the mole the whole time. And so whoever Charlotte is now has figured that out. She's like, oh, it's me. Or it's like kind of me. So I gotta call the flag. I gotta call the guy up.
I've completely forgot how many times Charlotte has double crossed people. And I think that the host is having the same problem. Who's my allegiance? What am I? Oh, we're working on that. Oh, just as I thought. Oh, I knew you were going to say that. Of course I'm the mole. Yes. Okay. Like I feel for this host because it's not easy being Charlotte Hale. I do not know where her loyalties lie. I still am confused about that.
Well, so in the first season, there was the Teresa character who is Bernard's lover, and Bernard kills her, and she was smuggling data out of the park. And one of the big mysteries of season one is, what is the data? What is she smuggling out of the park? And season two seemed to clarify that it's that they've been like, you know, mapping everybody's consciousness and brain pieces as they're rolling into Westworld, so that they're working on their like resurrection machine, the resurrection project. Mm-hmm. I had always just kind of assumed that was being smuggled out of the park for Delos. And I think that the development this week is actually a pretty important one for the Westworld mythology, is that it seems like Charlotte was actually betraying Delos and was trying to give this information over to this other guy, to Serac, who's in charge of Insight, totally different company that he's been working on buying Delos out. What he wants all of this for, when his, you know, professed mission statement to Maeve in last week's episode is he's here to save humanity, that they're at war and he wants to save humanity. What is he planning on doing with all of this data? He clearly very, very badly wants it. He wants to find Dolores. Little does he know he's talking to Charlotte, who is connected to Dolores. And if he knew any better, he could just like shake her and be like, hey, tell me where Dolores is at. But to Charlotte's credit, she plays a pretty good game of playing like, I don't know, you know more than me.
Why don't you tell me what you want me to get?
I thought it was a pretty big reveal that the Insight company is the one that wants all of this information. So to what end? We still do not know.
Right. It's becoming more clear, definitely.
Any thoughts on Nathan's new pet? That was a scary set of scenes with Tommy at the park.
Yes. Well, of course, I really enjoyed that line. I'm beginning to... Wait, no, I don't
yeah,
know.
She's like...
I love that line. I remember what it's like to be me.
Yeah, the harder I squeeze, the more I remember. Yeah. That guy deserved everything he got.
Yes, yes. And it is interesting to see unknown host start to form an attachment to her, its body, and start to kind of gain more confidence. I'm actually confused about the dog handler, who he was or what he was doing.
Yeah, I think that he was, you know, up to no good with Nathan, with her child.
Oh, God. It's just independent, though, not working for anybody else.
No, I think just like a bad actor who was Nathan were no good. And so Charlotte Hale, zero reservations. Like if she had some reservations about whatever it was that she and Dolores were working on, because she's feeling disconnected from Dolores, they seemed to fade away pretty quickly as she was killing this guy. And that's what she's saying is like, oh, yeah. I remember I'm supposed to kill people because people are terrible.
People are bad.
People are bad. But she does seem connected to Nathan. She does seem connected to Charlotte's son and wanting to be a mother that is more akin to what Nathan remembers. So that's tense.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable.
It's a very uncomfortable season of Westworld here. Anything else from this episode that stood out to you that you want to touch on before we close up?
I did want to give a shout out to the song at the end.
Yes, Doomed. Absolutely. You're still playing the game.
Doomed by Moses Sumney. As soon as I heard the violin version, I was like, that sounds really familiar. What is that? We're looking at another kind of pop song turned into an instrumental, which I love.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to give a shout out to that.
Nice. The music this season's been amazing. Ramin Djawadi's adaptations of all of these classic songs, just always one of the highlights of any episode. This season's been no different.
Yes.
Okay, Mariah, we have episode 4 is coming up next week, The Mother of Exiles. Are we going back to Game of Thrones world? Is this about Daenerys Targaryen?
Oh, I wish.
We will find out. We will find out.
Are they going to cut up Daenerys and send her to Costa Rica?
They did enough to Daenerys. Stay away. Stay away from the Mother of Dragons. The Mother of Exiles coming up next week. Mariah and I will be back to talk about it all. Until then, Mariah, you can either freeze your motor functions or have this strawberry milkshake. Your choice. Okay, looks like Mariah turned down the milkshake, and I'm certainly not going to drink it. So I think that just about does it for us here on Series Regular this week. The Hollywood Reporter's All In podcast on genre television, currently focused on Westworld. We will indeed be back next week talking about The Mother of Exiles. If you have any questions or comments for the podcast, email us, seriesregular@thr.com. You can also, of course, always find me on Twitter. I am @RoundHoward on Twitter. Check out what we're doing at thr.com/Westworld, where we have more coverage of the episode up for you, an interview with Tessa Thompson that you can read right now, and plenty more coming your way next week. Until next time, may you rest in a deep and dreamless slumber.